I believe what you're doing is harder than becoming a billionaire. What you're doing is probably harder than opening up a business.
Really?
Because your currency is attention. You have a lot of young viewers. What do you think right now these young men need when it comes to building that emotional fitness? The younger people right now are getting so depressed. What do you see that you can help us, like OG fathers like us, to deal with our young kids?
I think this has probably always been this way, but I think there's a trend that you start out as this young kid full of dreams, and then eventually the adult world kind of squishes it out of you. You lose your ability to play, you lose your ability to dream and imagine. And I think you always have to keep a little bit of that kid alive. I feel like you need at least something that can keep you going, that's your own thing, that your own little world to own. Otherwise, if you're just working for some company in a cubicle, you're never gonna express your soul like you really should.
I'm like big on it, right? Because what happened is we are born with nothing. When we are born, we have everything within us. And that's what I'm saying. Through the life experiences, I'm parent of five, but consciously or unconsciously, I did some damage to my kids. Like even my son, he's 13, 12 years old and he get on the stage and he speaks and like suddenly like he feels free. He doesn't have the fear. But the second, oh yeah, you said this stupid or you look ugly, judgment. Your hair. Judgment. This is something like the judgment and then it blocks you and then you start believing because we all have something within us. How do we bring it out to the world and then free us out?
If you're operating your life from a place of truth and love, the people's opinion you should care about are your family. If they think what you're doing isn't good and they tell you, like, I feel like you should listen to them. Maybe it's growing up in the social media age where there's more like of a comparison. Oh, you get to see what Kim Kardashian's closet looks like.
It's unrealistic expectations of yourself.
Welcome to Mastering the Inner and Outer Wealth with your host, Yarik Todla, where we dive deep into the art of building financial freedom from the inside out. Together, we'll uncover practical strategies, real-life success stories, and expert insights to help you master your inner wealth and create the life you've always wanted. So let's get started.
Welcome to the Inner Wealth Podcast with Yarik Todla. Today I have Raul Villesas and Tommy G as my guests. And we're going to talk about the inner wealth and the stuff, how quickly we got here or what we struggle with and the demons that we play on a daily basis. So Raul, let you start.
Man, listen, first of all, Tommy G, I am so impressed, man.
Thank you.
I was sitting here listening to the podcast you guys just recorded, and I Googled how many people have hit a million views, not a million views, a million subscribers in the channel. Do you know what the statistics for that is? 0.028% of people who are YouTube, not even the world. Yeah, I'm sure people from the world, it's like 0.0001%. YouTubers, 0.028% YouTubers have ever hit a million subscribers. So now I'm recording a mini documentary.
And then how many of them are bot followers?
But hold on, this is a different statistic. It's interesting. I'm recording a documentary, the difference between the millionaire mindset and the billionaire mindset. Mm. You know how many, what's the percentage of billionaires in the world?
800 divided by 7 billion, roughly,
that's
whatever that is.
0.05%. So the statistics to reach where you've reached 1 million is harder than to become a billionaire.
Really?
So
I wouldn't have guessed that.
I want to give you some insight because if you ever want to become a billionaire,
stay with us. Don't go. Don't go.
and that's the impressive part. Like what I heard from you and you is, if you don't enjoy what you do, you're never going to succeed. You're never going to succeed. So congratulations, man.
Thank you. And I think to me, it was nothing has ever been about chasing the most amount of money. Like when I had a sales job, I could never get excited about the quota. Like, oh, I'm going to make so much money. Then I hit the multiplier. I never could motivate myself to go the extra mile because I just didn't care enough about the job to do it. And so when I did YouTube, the first 4 years of doing YouTube, I lost money. It was something I enjoyed doing. I had fun doing. And then when I started making more money than my corporate job, I'm like, holy crap. Like all I wanted to do was simply, like there was a blog called Mr. Money Mustache about how to live frugally and then achieve financial freedom. So I'm like, okay, maybe I live in a van. I eat rice and chicken. Like I was ready to live the cheapest life as long as I could just replace my income through YouTube. But because I love what I do, all of a sudden I'm making more money than I ever, like I didn't even know it was possible. And I think it just goes to show that if you do what you're passionate about, you're always going to be the best. And I don't really think you can just chase the money and become the best doing that.
But I think that's where, like you said before, the millionaire mindset.
Yeah.
At the beginning, to make the first million, you're chasing. Mm-hmm. You're chasing. So when you start thinking, okay, if this is just money, I'm always chasing the money, right? So let's talk about views. You're always chasing the views. You said something earlier that you stopped just focusing on what people wanted to, the numbers, and just focus on doing you.
Because I cannot control the numbers. I can try and predict, oh, I think this video is going to do this. I think this video is going to do that. But at the end of the day, it always leads down a bad path. Like, because when the video starts bombing a little bit and you start questioning your life and existence, that doesn't matter. Like, if I just know every single Tuesday, I'm trying to upload some heat. And if I can accomplish that and my contacts keep getting better, the ideas keep evolving, my hope is that, you know, it's an evergreen channel that my what I want my stuff to be, I don't ever try to do something that's trending. So it doesn't, okay, Megan Thee Stallion drops an album. I'm not going to cover that. What I'm going to cover is something that hopefully 5 years from now, someone can watch the same episode and still be like, okay, I got something out of that.
So I think that's going against the grain, because like when you started real estate, everybody said, do this. And you chose to do the opposite. So I'm interested from both of you guys' perspective, what made you listen to that voice? Because that's an inner voice. That's like an intuition. Say, no, everybody's doing this. I'm gonna do this.
One that I can start with, Yark, that maybe we both share. Mm-hmm. Is there a healthy amount of Polish stubbornness, maybe?
You know, but I was always, and I don't know if I acquired a skill or, because, you know, I was also an athlete. So what happens, I was always alone. You know, like you were on the mat, I was in the swimming pool. Mm-hmm. So I was always alone. So I have always this voice, I'm getting goosebumps. I always have this voice that, you know, I have to deal and talk and clean all the noises around me. You know what I mean? I have to concentrate getting across the pool, you know, I mean, so, you know, and then going back, I visualize the whole race. And I always was like focused. And I think this was my biggest gift. So what happened, whatever I start doing, I only concentrate, you know, like in the swimming, you have this one line. And it's still like, even right now, we're in the tunnel, right? And I knew that's what I have to do. And it doesn't matter the noises. If my parents showed up, whoever showed up, I mean, president of the United States, or at that time I was Polish, right? I wouldn't even know. And it still suits me till now, you know, like when something happens in the market, like, yeah, you're doing this deal and the market lasts $208 million, I don't give a fuck. Like, I'm focused, and that's where I go. And I'm really good with disconnecting the noises, because I know truly that's what, you know, you help me a lot, connecting with my soul and my heart, so I truly know what to do, which is sometimes is bad. That's what I need. Guys, I need help, because I'm in the tunnel. I'm in the swimming lane. You know what I mean? So that was for me. I don't know what was for you.
As far as going against the grain, I think I've never been afraid to express myself how I feel. And I think I was never in a certain box as a kid. I was never just with the jocks or just with the nerds or just with the juggalos. Like, I felt like I could bounce from group to group. And that's kind of what my job is now. I bounce from group to group. I think if there's one superpower I have, it's like I feel like I can be in almost any room in the world and not feel out of place. And so I think part of it is just a personality trait that, you know, there's a lot of things I wasn't lucky with. Like, I'm disorganized. There's a lot of things that I suffer from. But as far as what I know I'm good at, I think that's one of them. So going against the grain has always just been a natural instinct for me. Plus, I've always been a little bit of like anti-system, anti-the man, or anti-authority. Or why is that? We have to do that rule, or we've been doing it this way for it. Why? Like, why can't I do it this way and try it? So I've been always brave to experiment and just go after something.
Always been a rebel.
Yes.
Yeah. A little bit of a rebel. Constantly breaking the rules.
Yes.
You said something like very, it's huge, and I just want to make sure, I want to emphasize that. You said you, doesn't matter what room you're in, you feel comfortable. You think this is because your inner voice, you know you're worthy, you're not, you know, because a lot of guys, like, you know, I was an introvert, like, I was very hidden. Like, she just said, I was hiding in the party, I was not going. I don't think I was worthy. Like, you know, I have that inner dialogue, I'm not worthy. You said you in the room and you can find yourself in any rooms. How you build, and that's like you, like both of you, that's a question for both of you. How you build this, that I'm worthy, that like the, you know, like I know, like I can be comfortable in every room I go, because it's not easy.
I grew up in humble Midwest culture, which is kind of the opposite of what you see in the Miami culture. And to me, there's never been a need to front or to flex. Like, I think the reason I feel comfortable in every room is because I'm just willing to be truthful about who I am. There's no need to like peacock or to pretend I'm something I'm not. And so because there's never a front to remember, like it just like, this is who I am, take me or leave me. And not everyone's going to take you. But I think when you are comfortable with yourself, there's a certain magic or ease of life that comes with it.
For me, a little bit different because I always was taught the fake it till you make it line, especially in the real estate world coming up. You want to be an entrepreneur, man, you got to look the part. You got to play the part. Remember, my first suit I bought was an Armani suit, $2,000. I couldn't afford it. I put in a credit card and I wore that suit every single time that I was going to meet a client. And I made money. So that suit became my identity. When the market crashed and I lost millions of dollars, then I had to realize that I need to find out who I am in the inside. Like the outside doesn't matter. So what happened after that, I became telling the truth to myself. And I stopped lying about who I was pretending to be and just being honest with myself. And I always say the man who has nothing to hide is the most comfortable man in the room. That's why exactly, I think that for you, writing that book, man, somebody reads that book and you could learn all the dark shit about you. So that's why now you could walk into a room and like, oh, they're not going to find out about this, about that, about that. So then you're comfortable.
Do you know that, like, I'm sorry that I can interrupt. Like yesterday at the party, like we have 250 people. And it's like everybody who came, like, you know, like most of the people know me, not only know me, but who I am, but they know me, but also, you know, they're my friends, but they also read my book. And a lot of guys are like, shit, I feel like I know you forever. Like I know you, but I did not know you from that way. And the connection is a lot deeper on different levels.
But see, this, we all also have to know that we have different versions. There's a version of me that loves to fucking show off. There's a version of me that wants to flex. There's a version of me that's very humble. There's a version of me who, oh, you're too much. You can't do certain things. My job is to be the observer and say, okay, how can I use this to create a bigger impact?
Well, we wear different hats, and it's appropriate to wear that hat depending on the situation that you're in.
But you jump very well, like you jump from head to head, like, you know, it's because I am who I am. Like this, that's what it is. It's right there on the play. But you have to jump, like you really switching the heads from head to head, like even with me, you did mine, and then the next day, what were you doing the next day? I mean, I was like, what?
I think some real gangster kind of stuff.
I mean, what the hell? Like you came from this, you go to the gangster. It's like this.
Have you? This is what we do, you know, in the work that I teach is knowing and naming the versions of yourself. Because I see that whether you handle yourself, there is, I've already met three different versions of you, three different personalities, you could say, right? Do you have a name for them? Do you name them? Do you know exactly, okay, this guy, when he goes into the cartel, meeting with the cartel, I can't be this guy because I'm gonna get in trouble. I have to be this guy. And do you know how to shift? Because you're very good. You may be doing it intuitively, but you're very good at shifting. And then you have a great pattern interrupt, which is humor. The humor breaks the pattern. And then, because I'm a student of this, man. I'm a student of behavior, body language, the way that people, you know, show up. So are you aware of that?
If I had a name, part of it is the documentaries aren't about me. So I don't necessarily have to present. My job is, I guess, if I had a name, what I am at these different times is curious. So I just, whether I'm with you or I'm with the gangsters or everything in between, I just have to be curious. And then there's like a different side you might see with my family or when I'm competing or when I'm, you know, there's a fierceness that I have when I'm in the wrestling room. I think
guys,
I just,
he's different with Sarah and Ben. Completely different
guy.
We all are. He gave this morning for coffee and I was like, that's not him. He is like, you know, carrying the side. Like, and the same thing, I was with him on the boat. Like I know him for like 8 years now. And I was with him with his daughter and his son. And I was telling all my brothers, this is different Rahul, man. He's like all over, like, and his daughter is like Jesus, she got him like right here, man. I was like, this is not Rahul.
Once you have a daughter, you'll know.
Yeah.
You'll know.
And this morning when you walked into my house with Ben in your hand and your wife, it's like, you know, like, oh my God, like different energy, like completely different, you know what I mean? So,
but I think one thing you said that is really important is the pattern interrupt. And I'm not like, it's not like a conscious trait of mine, but I do know, like, especially in going into a dangerous situation, if I can get the guys to laugh, I feel like the room is just,
diffuses that tension.
Everything is kind of leveled out.
Yep.
And whatever we're covering, whatever, like, it just gets easier after that. And plus, I think, humor, some of my favorite times is just like, and Keegan, my guy that you've met, like when we're going after a shoot, just especially when you deal with something that's insane, like you were just in a corridor in Tijuana where you're expecting the police to raid it. Because I've had that happen. So I have like a little, you know, PTSD when I visit Mexico. Like I'm just expecting to get raided by police. When you get through that and you're back in the car and just, we have like a lot, like stuff that if we got it recorded, I definitely would be canceled. Like just outrageous humor, saying the most crazy stuff. But having that, I don't know, if like graveyard humor or like wartime humor. Like I'm sure like if you're with soldiers in a trench, they're saying the most messed up stuff, but they're laughing and they're having a great, like, I think you need that to, it's almost like a therapeutic method. Like we just witnessed, we just were in a Boston crack house watching a guy cook up crack with one of his clients, an old man. He was using his apartment. And then also he told us a story about how he sold crack to a person until they overdosed. And I'm just like, it didn't hit me in that room how crazy it was that he said that he basically confessed to a crime. But then in the car ride, like part of us are like, you want to cry. And then the other part of you is just like, this is insane. And you laugh at the mixture of comedy and tragedy that's in life.
You know, I believe that healing through humor is real. Like when I went to India, there is a therapy, monks, that you actually go to the, like if you have cancer, or you have sickness, you go to these monks, and the whole time they help you meditate and help you laugh, like laughing yoga. It was crazy. I laughed for hours with nobody saying jokes, nobody saying anything, just the energy of the state of hearing somebody laughing, and the whole room, we were laughing for like an hour, and it just felt so good. And did you watch the Jamie Foxx comedy special that he has on Netflix now? You should watch it. He talks about how he had a stroke and he couldn't even move. He was in a wheelchair. He said the mantra that he kept repeating himself is, if I could laugh, I'm going to live. Mm-hmm. If I could laugh, I'm going to live. So his whole thing was just creating humor with the nurses. If I could laugh, I could live.
One of the things, that's a story that stands out from that is there's American soldiers that were in Japanese prisoner of war camps, and the conditions were terrible there. I mean, you're doing hard labor all day. For food, you would get like a bowl of seaweed with a little bit of rice. The guys were down to like 80, 90 pounds. It was massive suffering. But one thing they would do is they would have to stand up every morning in line, and they were supposed to salute the emperor. And they would wait. They would wait till that moment. They'd all save up a fart. And when they were supposed to salute the emperor, all the soldiers would fart. And that was like their way to like get back at the system, but also keep that laughter alive in the harshest of conditions.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to. So you have that. You have that pattern interrupt unconsciously, so you can start shifting.
Well, he just got out the camera, and he just put a slam joke. I was like, that's what I want you to say on the camera. The second is like, okay, we're done. It's like, boom. I was like, that's a Tommy G. It's like, you know, completely like, but it is. It's a pattern distraction. You learned this, or you think you just always had it?
I've always tried to be the class clown. So I think, like, if I can find a way to make someone laugh, that's just, I go for it.
You know, one question that I have for you, too, and it has to do with, like, where do you see right now? Like you said there's a lot of YouTubers. They just, you know, look at the next generation of content creation, right? And the entitlement mentality with TikTok, with the algorithm. Do you think that the market is changing, that actually we're going back to the long format content as opposed to being so used to, like, the hits, 1 minute, TikTok? 15 seconds.
I think, and this is the reason why I think podcasts have taken over the game so much, people are very hungry for raw, real, authentic conversations and experiences. Everything has been so packaged or Hollywoodized or special effects and filters that the people that are real and raw, they can build a very strong, almost, I don't want to say cult-like audience, but just a really strong following because, hey, they know that I'm an imperfect person, but they know that I'm going to get in the trenches. I'm going to bring them what I think is the real authentic story. And there's a trust there.
Yeah.
So I think maybe there was a trend of like, one, the quick hits, but perfection. We're like, oh, it's me showing off my beautiful life, doing XYZ, like dancing in front of a Rolls Royce or whatever like the TikTok trends were. But I think now the shift is going back to basic and raw. Like I saw a YouTube channel. It's an old guy that sits in front of a fire. He looks like he was a rancher his whole life. Like he's like one of those Western guys, mustaches, cowboy hats. And he just sits in front of a fire and is like, well, young man, when I was a kid, like he just gives advice that comes from the heart. And there's no special editing. There's no, you know, and people are hungry for that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a lot. I do a Daily Edge message every morning. We're doing it. How long?
Jesus. And it's funny, like, I know him for 8 years. I'm like, this motherfucker this time is going to forget. Or, you know, something happened. He got drunk or he just traveled. freaking, and then 1 o'clock, boom, Daily Edge.
Like, every single day.
Consistency. It's.
And that's the part where that's the rawest content that I have. Mm-hmm. And now we're playing with the idea of recording, because that's a big commitment. You do a 30-minute documentary every week. I mean, that's a lot of work. That's a whole production. It's a whole production. So I do a voice memo. That's a Daily Edge. It's like a little mini podcast, right? Mm-hmm. And we send out to my clients, and I would put it in SoundCloud. And that's my most viral content. So now I'm pushing myself to see how many videos of the Daily Edge I could create, and that's going to be a challenge.
I feel like what makes you great and your group great, I don't know if it's ever going to be going viral. It's going to be your recipe. I think it's when you get people in the room and then they can tell their friends what they experienced. I think that's your biggest path to growth, because I think there's certain things you can only experience when you're in that room. Like a TikTok will never hit the same way that people being in the room at the experience with you will hit.
Yeah.
But I think it's the energy in the room also.
Yes.
Tell us how
you're like a religious thing almost. Like when everyone gets into that same frequency where they're willing to be vulnerable, willing to dive deeper, like you get everyone on that same, that's powerful.
Yeah. And you haven't even experienced, like I can't wait for him to come to a leadership summit. You gotta come.
No, but I just want to hear from your guys when your guys came here, because you know, I connected with them. I connected with them.
That's right. Did you guys?
So what did they tell you? Like how?
Because especially Keegan is already very much into the self-development thing. It was a new thing for Miguel, and so it was really fun for him to grow and kind of open up, because he's more of a very stoic guy. Like he just works really hard and he kind of keeps it in his head. So to be in a situation, like he said, like one of the last exercises, like they just stand in front of somebody and like him and his partner would be laughing, but then he finally put his game face on and went for it. So I think that's the big thing, is you get to craft these experiences where people may have never done things like that before, and you challenge them to go deeper. So I think.
So you're 31 years old now, right? Mm-hmm. What would you say now? Like you have a lot of young viewers, a lot of young people that follow you. What do you think right now these young men need when it comes to like building that emotional fitness? You know, like we talked about, like you're taking risks. I mean, you're not afraid of failure, right? But 99.9% of the young population right now, the biggest fear is like, I don't want to be judged. I'm not enough because look at social media, they have more. I'm afraid of failure. I don't know what I'm gonna do after school. So they hit that depression. I've seen the statistics, man. The younger people right now are getting so depressed. Like my daughter suffers from anxiety. I'm like, what do you have to be anxious for? You have you have all this. But again, that's my old school of way of thinking, because I'm not in her shoes. But now you are younger than us. Mm. What do you see that you help us, like OG fathers like us, to deal with our young kids?
You know, I think this has probably always been this way, but I think there is a trend that you start out as this young kid full of dreams, and then eventually the adult world kind of squishes it out of you. Mm. You lose your ability to play, you lose your ability to dream and imagine. And I think you always have to keep a little bit of that kid alive. Yeah. Hey, like you might have this certain job that you hate on the side, but maybe your passion is you make leather wallets for someone or whatever it is. I feel like you need at least something that can keep you going. That's your own thing, that your own little world to own. Custom watchmaker. I write books. It doesn't matter what it is, but some sort of artistic expression that keeps yourself alive. Otherwise, if you're just working for some company in a cubicle, you're never going to express your soul like you really should.
Yeah.
But you don't think, because I'm like big on it, right? Because what happened is we are born with nothing, right? And what happened, we built, yet, when we are born, we have everything within us. And that's what I'm saying. Through the life experiences, I talk about it a lot. Through parents, I'm parent of five. But, consciously or unconsciously, I did some damage to my kids. And my parents did it to me. The teachers, the coaches, the friends, And then we start building this stuff. Like, even my son, it was funny, he's 13, 12 years old, and he came on the stage, in your stage, PBD, 6,000 people, he came on the stage and he speaks. And like suddenly, like he feels free. He doesn't have the fear. But the second, you said this stupid, or you look ugly, judgment. Your hair. Judgment. This is sounding like the judgment, and then it blocks you, and then you start believing. How do we make sure that people just let it go of all the fears and all the, that's what you come in. And you just take this stuff apart. because a lot of guys, like even me, and again, you know, we talk about me, like me hiding all the time, even coming to your seminar, Tony Robbins seminar, all the seminars, I was the last one. And I did not, even if there was a speaker, I was always self-improvement. But if anybody look at me, you going to ask me a question? Oh, shit. Like, you know, I was running.
That's interesting, because one thing I know you for, like a signature of you, like when you get intense, you have like a certain look that overtakes your face.
He couldn't see you in your eyes. Yeah. Like he will always like look away because of the uncertainty, you know? Like, you know, and that's what we talk about is the man who has nothing to hide. Now he's free. That's a freedom, like you know.
Because the freedom comes. That's why your creativity, like if you know how to, because we all have something within us. How do we bring it out to the world and then free us out? Because that's when we are the most creative and the most giving.
I think if you're operating your life from a place of truth and love, the people's opinion you should care about are your families, your friends, the people that you actually love and they're in your circle. If they think what you're doing isn't good and they tell you, like, I feel like you should listen to that. But anything that from the outside, I think kind of just bounces off. Like, it doesn't really matter. I don't care if someone, I still drive a 2017 Chevy Cruze with like 200,000 miles. I don't give a shit if someone's like, oh, you're poor, you're this, you're that. Like, I know what my mission is. I know what I'm here for. So I think maybe it's growing up in the social media age where there's more like of a comparison. Like, and it's visible too. Like you see someone that's really doing well, like you see how far away from it you are. Whereas back in the day, you just saw the people that lived next door to you that were in a similar environment. So there wasn't like a huge comparison gap. So I think maybe that's part of it too, is like an exposure. Oh, you get to see what Kim Kardashian's closet looks like and you just realize you're a peasant.
It's unrealistic expectations of yourself.
Plus, who cares if Kim Kardashian has 2,000 pairs of shoes? Like, that's, I think just knowing that there's like, it's like a fish trying to bite at the shiny thing. Like, you know that at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter.
But, you know, but it has to do also, like you said, your upbringing too. Like you had, you know, did your father pour a lot into you? Was it your mother? Mm-hmm. Who poured into you that made you feel like, hey, this is who you are? Doesn't matter what the world says you are. You have to know who you are.
My parents, I was a very stable environment, and my parents were very good at encouraging me. Like, they didn't ever try and force me into a box. Like, some fathers, I think, try and live vicariously through their kids too much. Like, I've noticed, like, the most intense wrestling dads never wrestled themselves, but they want their son to be a national champ, like, tomorrow. And my pop was always just very good at encouraging, oh, you're interested in this? I'll drive you to it. I'll make sure you get to it and try your best. And so they just gave me a stable platform to jump off into the water.
Yeah, and did you ever get bullied? Did you get bullied?
No, I was the bully.
Yeah.
You were the bully too?
Oh, hell yeah.
Come on, man.
Dude, like I'm telling you, if the social media exists, there's no way I would be what I'm at. I was a horrible human being. In order to stay in a high school, the less level, the less grade, my parents has to go to school every single day. Because in Poland, you have a grade for the behavior. Mm. So what happened is I got F. So you cannot go to the last grade of the high school. So my parents went and plead the case. It's like, okay, we're going to come to the school. Please pass him because, you know, he got a good grade. Pass him to the next grade, you know, because of my, because here what happened is I was a swimmer. So what happened is I have all my swimming buddies. So, you know, so we're like the cool guys. And because I have a, you know, older, my brother, and, you know, they were swimmers. So they were, you know, so I have a bubble. I was surrounded by the bubble. And then I have the bad guys. I was also the good guy because I know the older people. Mm-hmm. So I was like I never fought in my life, but I was the horrible bully.
For me, bullying is what kind of gave me that edge that I needed, you know, to survive in this country. Because I came from Ecuador, sixth grade, coming in here, private school. Everything was taken care of, had a uniform. I was at military school in Ecuador. So I come in, I'm thinking everybody's gonna respect each other. Everybody has, no. First day of school, somebody says something, I say yes. And all of a sudden everybody's talking about me. It's like, hey, this is a welcome, this is great, man. This school really like cares about me, like the new kid. So this Puerto Rican girl comes over and says, hey, is it true what you said to that guy? I said, he said something, I said yes. I don't know what he said. So he asked you could fuck me up? And I said, yes. He was the toughest kid in the school. Now the first day of school, I have to fight outside. Oh. Welcome to America, motherfucker. And that was the beginning. And my parents didn't know how to speak English. Like I had to, I was pretty much here by myself, figuring shit out. And And I got bullied from sixth grade all the way to the beginning of high school. Then I realized, damn, okay, I needed
that to, makes you tough.
Yeah. So I joined a gang. I was part of like the junior Latin Kings. Oh, thank God I wasn't old enough to be the real Latin Kings, but we got kicked out. Our crew was too crazy. We attracted too much attention. They told us, don't wear the beads. Back in the days, like the beads, don't wear the beads. We come into school with the beads, wearing the colors, throwing gang signs. And we had all the power, man. We're like, all the girls wanted us. All like half of the school hated us. It was like five of us, four Dominican and an Ecuadorian. So, and then when they kicked us out, the whole school hated us. So we had a whole, like a whole different problem. But I'm sharing that with you because now these kids, like they get bullied, cyberbullied. They get judged cyber, so they don't have the capacity. So I feel for them because they, even though that's safer, it is worse, I think, because at least I felt the pain. I got my ass kicked, but I went home and it went away.
Mm-hmm. It went away. It follows them during school, outside of school.
Yeah, now, like, cyberbully, yeah, they follow you everywhere and it expands. Yeah. What would you say, if your son, you have a son now, what would you say to him in order for him to be able to withstand the bullies, withstand, you know, the world could be a hard place?
I would say two things. One is, on the front end, be kind to people, be the guy that welcomes the kid to the lunch table or takes people in. But at the same time, some sort of combat sport, whether it's wrestling, boxing, jiu-jitsu, he's going to, whatever he likes, he's going to get into, so that if something does happen, Pop gives you permission to go freaking to the backyard. And you know, and then, you know, you always find, though, after a fight is a good sense of brotherhood with that guy. Yeah. Even though you had this big interaction, as soon as you're done fighting with someone, it's amazing how much you're just like, okay, man, like, we're good to go.
But see, but that doesn't happen nowadays because you can't even have a chance to fight.
Because you'll get expelled or arrested.
No, you have a chance because they're in the internet.
Mm.
You never, look, it's words. It's words. So, you know, what I told my son, like, you know, that was my first thing, you have to defend yourself. You have to stand up for yourself. So he had a group of kids. I didn't know this, but you know, I told myself, if you don't have bullies, I'm gonna be your biggest bully because I need you to have that emotional fitness. But he was getting bullied with some kids in school. I didn't know this until afterwards. But he told me like that. I know that they were doing it out of pain. Like I come home and I have a great family. I'm good. You know, they come from a broken home. They don't have this, so they were just projecting.
Yeah.
But I know who I am. So.
That's a cool response.
Building himself, like he, and man, and sometimes like I look at him like, man, he's taught me so much. My kids have become my biggest teachers. But what I could have done different.
Listen, that's exactly, watch it. The older your son's going to get, that's exactly what's going
to
happen.
I could have done different with them is to help them see that they also, like, it's not just about like their pain. It's about protecting your energy, because you can't become a doormat, because that's the other part. Like you become a healer. Now everybody wants to push you around because, you know.
Yeah, boundaries, lines in the sand.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, boundaries. Make sure that you know, hey, this is the, you know, I'm not gonna be your punching bag. So, and that's you know, how long have you been married?
Four years.
4 years.
Three years.
Honeymoon.
Yes.
Honeymoon.
Yeah, still very
good. Oh, yeah. He's in the honeymoon space. Like, yeah.
So that's what I tell men. You become the container for your queen, for your wife, right? Mm. But you have to also be careful not to become the garbage can. Because, you know, women sometimes, they want to just throw all the shit at us. And we have to be stoic. We have to handle it. But we also have to help them grow.
You know, we have, like, the biggest men in the age group is usually coming 45 to 50. Because, you know, going through life, they have all the experiences, and they were the punching bag, or they were people pleasers, and they, you know, they were looking, they always thought they got the life, figured it out, and then finally they got to the point, it's like, shit, I did it. And now we're like, we're so glad because we have more younger generation, and now at least, you know, our goal is to have, because we have children, we have sons, so we don't want our sons to go through the shit that we went through, and mostly like all the brothers and everybody is like, shit, it's like an evolution. But you wanna give it like a shortcut and tools to the kids that, you know, that you didn't have as a little one. Yeah. You know, because our parents were not aware of it. They have books, they have to go to library. We have now everything in the social media, you know, so the education, everything is free. And you know, you tell your kids, yeah, read the book. It's like, you know, I mean they need to experience, but if you hear it from somebody else, at least that's how I am. You know, I'm just it's a different information. You process the information little bit by little, and it's like I always say, the planting the seed. And if somebody can plant the seed with my son, or I can send with my kids, with my daughter, with
changes everything. It's the older everything. They get, it seems like the less it's going to come from you, the parent, because you become non-cool as a dad at a certain age. Yeah. But if they can get a really good coach or mentor or teacher in their life, that's...
Bunch of uncles.
Believe me, watch, Ben's going to, like, he's not going to listen, like, freaking, we walk somewhere, and what the fuck? Like, look, I'm getting goosebumps, man. I'm not fucking joking you. Listen, we in Italy, right?
Yep.
So he's my son, is walking, right? And he's talking to my son, and he said something, and my son, yeah, did you see what Rose? What the fuck? That's what I've been saying for like years.
Mm.
Listen, I'm walking with his daughter. She's asking me for the best advice, like, you know, invest in yourself. And Abby goes to Raul, and Raul's like, it's like
I've been saying the same thing.
Hear it completely differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know that, right? That, like, there's something about father, and it's like, so that's what I said. Like, I cannot raise my kids, but I want to surround myself with as many uncles. And that's what we talk about. Like you said, you want to do that. Like, you know, 10 guys go on the trip, and you know, you really also gotta really build. Like we have to build a tribe, and build the brotherhood, the community. That I know where I'm gonna go, like when we do the inner circle, and you know I'm flying with my brothers, and you know it's and they're not you know and I'm going with spend the time with Raul the day before the summit, and my son is spending with all those guys. I know they're not gonna talk about hookers, fucking cheating, freaking alcohol, drinking, cussing. Talk about I know he's safe and he's gonna have the good lessons, and the whole conversations, you know, they go to the bar, they watch the games, they have a deep conversations, they don't get shit-faced, you know, and then it's like, hey, this uncle said this, like, he's got, like, how many uncles do you have? A million. You know what I mean? But that's what important. Like you said, there's and you have the same with Alejandro.
Yeah.
You know, like, I connect, like, with his son, and it's like, He heard this so many times, but Yarek said it. What the fuck? Who is Yarek? Like, I told you this, and the same thing I have. So it's very important. So building the tribe, and you know, and with the time, you know, we connected on different level. I think that's because it's like to me that the tribe that you said and the brotherhood, like to me, is everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wouldn't be here, and like you know, we talked yesterday about the mindset difference. The more people you help, you know, everybody brings you up. You know what I mean? But you got to have the boundaries. So those people, because a lot of people want part of you and I want to be transactional, I want to bring you down.
Is there a community for, like, YouTube creators that you're part of? Like, is there, like, do you guys connect? Do you guys, you know, share best practices? Do you have that?
Yeah, I have a couple of really close friends in the business that I call for anything and run through when we're having trials and tribulations. And I've kind of learned who... Because I'm a big giver in that space where it's like my competitive advantages is I feel like I have some of the best connections in the underworld. And so a lot of people want to hit me up and say, hey, can I film with it? Like, can you introduce me here? If we're good, my book is open to everyone. But if I've recognized some of the takers in the space and it's like, okay, like now I'm closed off to you. It's not like a well-organized thing, but it's like, hey, you know, Brandon Buckingham, I need to give you a call. I'm going through something. Jordan Welch is a guy in Miami that's really good. But yeah, there's definitely some really good guys in this space.
Duncan?
Danny Duncan?
Yeah, Danny Duncan.
Mm-hmm, I'm familiar with him.
He's been blowing up.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
One of my, Bill Truex, Inner Circle guy, he's building a couple of his houses. He's doing a lot of selling real estate.
Incredibly well. The amount of money he's made selling t-shirts is
ridiculous. It's impressive. I'm truly fascinated about the whole content creation. I believe what you're doing is harder than becoming a billionaire. Like, what you're doing is probably harder than run, like, open up a business.
Really?
Because your currency is attention.
Yeah.
That's the currency that you're in. If you have attention, then you can sell whatever you want, but you have to have the attention, but you have to keep them in your ecosystem week after week after week. So that is hard. We sell a product or a service. You have a tenant, that tenant is gonna, you don't need to sell the tenant over and over again. The tenant is there. But you constantly have to renew your lease every single week because there's so much competition with the attention. So how do you mentally prepare yourself? How do you mentally create this game in your mind that you don't feel overwhelmed?
Hmm. To me, it's the power of the ideas and my contacts that can take me in. And I always try and think of an idea. Like, if I don't think, like, it might be the coolest subject to me in the world. Like, let's say there's someone doing really something good for the community in Milwaukee. But it has to be a story that can get a million views or more to be worth pursuing because of all the overhead, everything that comes along with it. Mm. There might be a time in the future where I can make a passion project and sell it to Netflix. But it's got to overlap where it's not just about the views either, where I'm just going after what's trending or what's I think is going to be good. It's what is something that I think I'm intensely fascinated about and I think can do a million plus views. I guess I'll always just have those ideas. Like I know where I'm, okay, in February I'm probably going to be in, there's a prison tour I'm going to go on in California. Then in March I'm going to be somewhere in Texas. Like I kind of just have it organized geographically. Here's my heavy hitters in that area and just keep them ahead of the curve.
And you seem like you're competitive. Like you play wrestling, you have a competitive side of you. Mm-hmm. Who do you think is your competition? Who do you think is like, man, like I know he's good, but I know I'm gonna blow it out of the water.
I would say one is the mainstream media industry. Like I love nothing more than just smashing those guys. Like covering the same subjects and running circles around them. That to me gives me a lot of satisfaction. In this space, I would say I don't know. I haven't got. I've lost my competitive edge because it's different. Like when it's hands on, when it's like a physical thing, it's way easier for me to be competitive in that situation. But as far as guys that I admire in this space, there's a guy named Bald and Bankrupt who does really dangerous and risky travel. There's another guy named Timmy Carter. This guy just got done filming with Barbecue, the leader in Haiti. Him and this guy, Bald and Bankrupt, they did the idea where they started off, what's the Darien Gap? So they paid the cartel money and they acted as if they were an immigrant getting smuggled all the way through to the United States. Wow. So they took that journey. They went on the train, La Bestia.
They document everything.
They documented the whole thing. And Timmy got so sick that he almost died in a hospital from some sort of bug that he got. But that to me is like seeing guys that can chase after things like that is like, okay. I think in like the American underworld, I feel like I'm close to the top of the food chain. But then when you go international and you're some real sketch, like that's another level of the game that I'm impressed by, people that can do that.
It's so funny, like you think you're the big shit in one bubble and the other bubble, like you're nobody.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
You know what I mean?
Do you fear sometimes when you do this documentaries, like, man, like, I'm pushing the envelope too far.
We felt that way a little bit going to Tijuana. Like that was one of those things where before I left, I'm like, honey, like just to double check, like you can access the life insurance, right? Like, can you log in? Can you, like, and you don't want to act like you're going to die before you go, but, I'm willing to walk away from things too. Like it's not just if I feel like the contact isn't well respected or isn't who he says he is, that's going to cause big issues. Mm-hmm. So it's that balance of it's walking that tightrope of danger and security and knowing that the people that are going to take me in have a trust in the channel and know what the objective is.
Because you're the new age journalist. Mm-hmm. Like, you're the guy who goes into the war zones mm-hmm. and documents mm-hmm. things. I mean, and part of it is also you're going to create enemies. Have you built some enemies?
Very few.
Yeah.
I don't have that mentality in this space.
I think it's his joke. I think this guy hates me. Okay, I'm going to fix it with a few jokes. You know, I'm going to talk about your dick a little bit.
To me, there's no reason to make enemies. I would say if there's any... There were some YouTubers that I feel like I've gotten burned by. Like I opened my contact book and then when it was my turn to ask something for them, left on red kind of thing where it's like, oh, interesting. So I wouldn't even consider them enemies. I just say like I have my boundaries where if that guy reaches back out, hey, sorry, but I'm not really interested in collaborating. But to me, I think the opposite of what I want is enemies. Like I'll give you an example. I was with the Latin Kings in Chicago. And I don't even know some of the lingo they're saying, but they're dissing the 2-6s. They're dissing the Satan disciples. They're dissing all the different gangs in the area. They're dissing, but I didn't know that. And I start hitting a blunt and they're like they made it as if I was dissing one of their rivals. And then I had to clarify, like, look, guys, I'm not even remotely in the streets. One day I will collaborate with your enemies too. I just did a shoot in Memphis where we didn't really know what we were getting into, but I went to one guy that was a rapper on the north side, and I went to another guy that was on the south side, and I found out after that they had a rival. So I don't look for the tension, and I don't try and talk about, like, I'm not going to, hey, can you diss this guy so I can go tell him what you said? Yeah. But I try and leave the situations that I'm always invited back. That's my motto.
Yeah. I mean, I figure you probably got a couple of calls like from people like, hey, don't do this or don't cross that line. Like, you know, have you gotten to the point that you know, it's kind of scary, like, oh, I'm not gonna cross this, I'm gonna do this?
You know, one of them would be going really deep into cartel territory because it gets so dangerous and dark there. And then it's like, I like to vacation in Mexico. So I don't want to, even if I get to land a video with these guys, I don't want to be in a situation where I'm vacationing and I'm worried about being kidnapped or my family.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I was getting to. It's like, you got to.
So walk, because here what happened is you have a high consciousness level, right? But now you have awareness to all different bubbles and different world. And you see the underground world and all this stuff. How are you not being now paranoid, having a son going? This is exactly like, you know, doing this stuff because you know what is going on behind the closed door.
One, we're speaking of bubbles. A lot of this violence happens in a bubble. If I'm talking to the Latin Kings of Chicago, they're not coming to Milwaukee to bother me or to bother anyone. Like, their world is so small. Like, their enemies live a block away, two blocks away. And that's really like as big as their world is. So once I leave that bubble, that's kind of, it doesn't, there. Yes. Yeah. So, and the other thing is I don't do people dirty. I don't try and make people look bad. I don't try and do hit pieces on people. I don't want anyone to have to think, oh, I'm going to try looking for this guy. So that to me is kind of.
You find that angle. The final angle to be, you know, not to put people under the bus so you don't create enemies. But
yeah, I'll still ask them tough questions, but it's not me judging them. It's not me. This isn't a PR piece. Like, if I'm interviewing the Gangster Disciples and they're going to talk about their charity work, it's like, okay, I'm not just, let's talk about some other stuff too. Yeah. So it's being asking enough tough questions, but also not putting them in a corner where, oh, this is just a bad person. Like, you get to see the yin and yang of them and you get to decide for yourself as the audience.
What is the toughest question to ask? And it's like, shit, I shouldn't ask that.
Asking pimps, like, so they'll be like, oh yeah, I be bossing these women up. And I'm like, Hold on, buddy. You take 100% of the money. You're here chilling, smoking weed while your woman's out, like, risking her body and her life out there. Don't even tell me for a second that you're the one bossing him up. And he's like, nah. Like, the kid was just dumb. I mean, the kid just grew up. His aunt taught him how to get into the game. So I'm trying to get empathy for him, because if you're in an environment where your own aunt is teaching you how to become a pimp, like, I can see why you're a pimp. So I'm not there to judge him, but when he says nonsense like that, I'm not afraid to push back and be like, I don't think your concept of the world is a little off, pal, you know?
And who you look up to, like, you know, whether it's your business or your life, who's like the guy or the woman that you're like, man, that's my North Star?
I really love Teddy Roosevelt. I think we were talking earlier about being able to wear many hats in life. He was the boxer. He was the police chief. He was the rancher. He was the president. He was the soldier. So he got to wear a lot of different hats, and he did a lot of them very well. And he just took the adventure of life. That to me, like, when he left the office and he didn't win one of his re-elections, he went to the deepest part of the Amazon jungle that was undiscovered and almost died on that trip. And that was actually what ended his life early, because he got illness from the jungle. So most people play it safe. Like, you're the president. Okay, I'm going to stay in my mansion. I'm going to only drive in the limo with the bodyguards. He went to the deepest part of the Amazon jungle. So treating life like one big grand adventure to learn from and to enjoy, that to me, like, Teddy Roosevelt is an all-time great guy of history to read and observe.
What about you?
My father. For me, it's my dad. My dad has been, like, the biggest inspiration of what it's like to be a man and a leader. When I was in my gang era, 19 years old, my father took me to see a doctor, and he was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy. Mm. So at that moment, I had to shift. I couldn't be fucking around with this shit anymore. I had to become a man. He was in a wheelchair for the last 25 years of his life. Every time I had a bad moment or a bad day, I just have to call him. All he had to do was pick up, because I know that whatever I was going through, it was never going to be as bad as what he was going through. And if he could still have a smile, man, it just made all the difference to me. So for me, that was like, I would strive. If I could be half the man that he was, I won.
That's beautiful.
How about you?
You know, I got few guys, but because I'm a swimmer, so for me it's Michael Phelps. Like, you know, it's and the reason, like, he got more respect from me, not when he was on the top of the game. I mean, he was like, you know, he's not supposed to even be a swimmer, you know, because of his ADHD. But then when he got on the top after, you know, winning the 8 gold medals and then went back to like smoking, drinking, or DUIs, you know, lost completely focus in his life. And he just rediscovered himself, you know, went deep in the inner work and find himself, find a purpose again in swimming, helping others, helping kids, helping the whole society and rechanging the swimming world. Like that guy, like to me, is like, you know what I mean? But this is because of, but it's like, I like him as a swimmer because that's a guy that made it, lost it, made it again. And it's, you know what I mean? I like a lot of like a supposed figure. And, you know, for me, I'm Polish, so it's a... Jan Paul II. I mean, he, like our Pope, you know, this is like, that guy done so much. He broke the Communist Party. Like, you know, he doesn't get a credit for that. And you know, brought Poland to the world. And it's, it, remember, this is like when I grew up, it was like, you know, conversation in every home. And it's like, if anybody you think of a man, it's you think of him, you know. So that's for me, like the deepest of the deepest.
Awesome. How you want to wrap it up? What's the last question you want to ask?
I want to ask, like, him. We've got my son here, so I already asked you that, but I will ask you that again. Okay, so we now we all have sons here. We have all we have daughters, so it's like for the kids. I like to ask the questions, you know, because it's important, you know, for the young generation, because that's what we're doing. You know, we're helping everybody. We're here to serve. You know, the word of wisdom, you know, and I'm almost like, you know, tell real, you know, little Raul, 18, your son is 18, 20. Abby is so it's like, you know, the word of advice, like, why would you want to know that that you wouldn't know, like you're young, you
yes, you mean,
yeah,
so what would I want them to know? That no matter what happens they're always gonna be loved, like unconditional love. Like that's one thing that I learned from my parents. I was a back. I look back and like my kids don't do half the shit that I did. Like I'm so blessed. Like I put my parents through hell, but they had unconditional love, and that's what built my self-esteem. That's what built who I am because they just pour into me. So I want my kids to know that like, no matter what happens, you have unconditional love. Now the world may not love you the same way, so you have to add value to the world. Mm-hmm. So you can't be entitled. Like you have to add value. You have to find your place because at home. We're going to love you unconditionally. The world, you need to bring value.
Patrick, what is the one question you want to ask Raul? One question.
I was literally going to ask the exact same question.
Okay.
What would you tell your younger self?
Okay. Tommy, the same question for you.
Take risks, experiment, enjoy the journey, and have fun. Because if you're not having fun doing it, what's the point?
And mine is like to my kids, fail. Get up, fail. Because we only learn for failures. We don't learn for successes.
Boom. Beautiful. Great.
You know? So thank you guys.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you guys.
If you like this podcast, check out the other podcasts I've done here with Tommy G and Raul Velasquez. Follow us. You can find us online. And, you know, I will put the links and go find us.
Peace. Thank you for listening. Leave your comments and subscribe for more insights.